VentureCast.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
With tea in 1993. Ben and I are living together in Marin County. We don't have very much money at all. We shop at midnight at Safeway. Everything is Safeway Select. We actually eat a couple of cans of human potted meat food product, like dog food for people. And that Jack in the Box thing happens. Uh-oh. And Ben, my reaction is, oh, those poor people. And Ben's reaction is, wait till you see the sale that Jack in the Box is going to have to put on to keep from going out of business. And sure enough, like a week later, they're like, 4-for-1 tacos. I'm like, well, that's it. And he's like, oh, no. The bottom hasn't even begun to drop out.
It's like, wait for it.
And they really did. Like 2 months later, it was pretty much, if you come into the restaurant and give us any currency from a penny to a dollar, you can leave with all the food you want. You can even come around back and make it yourself. We don't care.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
If you want to cut into podcasts, just start right now, 1993, fellas, and we'll buzz through 93.
Exactly. Oh, and the Beatles could be a little bonus package.
Indeed.
Okay. Fellas.
Timmy, we are already warmed up, man. We had a half an hour warm up.
Ever. We have taken on the roles of the Beatles, claiming their personalities for this specific 1993
podcast. That's tough. Does that mean you're Ringo? Are you claiming Ringo, Timmy?
Yeah, because Ben's already outed me as Dickhead Paul in the last little mini thing.
Oh, that sucks. I'm ruined. I have to be either George or
you can
John.
Be Glenn John. Be Glenn Johns.
That'd no, I want to be Billy Preston. I can't carry it off at all, but that, believe me, that's what I want to be.
All right. Well, we are going to get moving on this 1993 podcast. We are looking for the best album here on 50 Years of Music with 50-year-old White Guys on the Drive-In Podcast Network. Jeff Simons from the Top Rope. We have one album to discuss as the Grammy winner and as the best-selling album of 1993. Go ahead, name some good albums that came out this year. Not the ones that you're going to pick yourselves, but name some albums that came out in
93. I can only think of the one I'm going to talk about.
Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins. In Utero.
In Utero was very good.
Snoop Dogg, Doggy Style. I hope that's it. I know it's not, but I'm just going to hold my breath and
we've
hope
got,
it's Snoop Dogg.
We've got Counting Crows, August and Everything After.
Oh, that's
we've
a great
Pearl
record.
Jam Versus.
Also
got,
great.
We've got so many albums, but the Grammy.
Yeah, Wu-Tang. We got Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang Clan, the number one selling album, the Grammy winner, is...
It's the Grammy winner. It's the number one album.
The Bodyguard soundtrack.
If I should stay, I would only be in your way.
Wouldn't it be great if Kevin Costner came in with like a duet voice?
But I know
I am the bodyguard.
I think of you.
I think of you too.
Every step of the way.
Hit it.
And we'll always love you.
Okay. I know the song. Good job, Whitney. What else was on this album?
Yeah, seriously. What's the second single from this record?
Well, okay, here are the names of the songs. I Have Nothing, I'm Every Woman, Run to You, Queen of the Night, Jesus Loves Me, Even If My Heart Would Break, which is a Kenny G, Aaron Neville collaboration.
Hey now. Oh, dude, play that right now.
Okay.
Start right in the middle of that. Let's
We've
hear it.
We've had some fans clamoring for Kenny.
Oh, yeah. Cash it.
Huh.
I've been around this world. I've been a lot of places.
That's so great. That actually sounds like Activa background music. You know, like that yogurt for people with gastrointestinal distress? Hey, Jamie Lee Curtis, like that's just playing in the background. Like, listen, if you need probiotic help, Activa will make you regular.
So that's the song that Rod Stewart and Jeff Beck did together, right?
No, that's People Get Ready.
That's People Get Ready rewritten as an Aaron Neville original.
Yep.
It really does sound just like that, though.
Lisa Stanfield, Someday I'm Coming Back. It's Gonna Be a Lovely Day by Soul System with periods between each of the letters.
And that's a cover of Lovely Day, Love, or is it different?
I don't know. Let's find out. This is the first time I've ever listened to the Bodyguard soundtrack.
Ooh. Modern hip hop.
Oh yeah, CNC Music Factory.
Oh, yeah, it is. A cover of that, right? By the way, the original of that song is great.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's great song. We got this one by the Curtis Singers.
That sounds pretty good.
Okay. There's a reason. There's a reason it sounds good. Wait till you hear what song it is.
As I walk on. Searching for the light in the darkness of insanity.
Boy, how psyched was Nick Lowe that this ended up on the Bodyguard soundtrack? He probably bought two extra houses with this record. Holy crap.
Good. That's lucky stuff. Lucky stuff. All right. Well, that was the year in music. Thanks so much for coming.
By the way, ironically, even the movie's not very good. Like, this is amazingly, every part of this product is super mediocre.
Oh, bad Kevin Costner haircut.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. He's got the weird, like down facing.
Yeah, it's not good. Yeah.
And all of that being said, Whitney Houston actually can sing. She has a beautiful voice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and, like, we've had people, like, we just had the Nat King Cole's daughter who can't sing. Like, this woman can really sing.
No question.
All right. Real quick, I'm going to give you guys 10 seconds to think of an answer for this question. And we'll fill it with Jeff Simon's original from River Run when we actually produce the podcast. But right now, it could just be dead silence.
No, I'm going to put my record on. Are you kidding?
Okay. So you get to pick the track. I'm going to give you guys 10 seconds. And then we're going to play categories. And you can't look on your computer, Ben Barton. Musicians,
I can't cheat. Come on now.
No, musicians who successfully transitioned into the world of acting, and I don't mean little cameos where they popped up in a film or popped up on a TV show. I mean, oh yeah, that person was acting in that particular movie or TV show. So 10 seconds to think about those who have made a successful transition. Hit it.
That was 10 seconds.
All right. Nice job. Ben Barton, you go first.
Ice Cube.
Mark Wahlberg.
Ooh.
Ben Barton.
That's a great one. Wait, what'd you say, Timmy?
No. I've got the list. Go ahead.
Oh, all right. Ice T.
I see you working that. You're working that angle.
I'm working all the ice. I'm working on ice.
Ice, baby. Wait, I had another one. Oh, Steve Earle was great on The Wire.
Okay.
That's fair.
Ben.
Dwight Yoakam.
Oh,
yes.
That's a good call.
In Sling Blade, right?
Yeah, totally.
Nice. All right.
Can I use Billy Bob Thornton and his transition into being terrible rock and roll singer?
Count at all.
Who else you got?
I thought I had another one and it just jumped completely out of my head.
Because I've got one just.
Oh, Isaac Hayes. Great in several movies and on South Park.
Okay. Isaac Hayes, we give it to him.
LL Cool J.
LL Cool J, yes.
His best role is Ridiculous on 30 Rock when he plays the rapper named Ridiculous. He's so great. He makes me laugh so hard in that episode.
All right. Jeff Simon, your stall.
I'm out. I have nobody else.
I think the problem
was... Oh, Dolly Parton in 9 to 5. There she's fantastic.
Oh, come on. Timmy, I already won this. I've refused to climb to answer anymore.
I lose, but I'm just glad I squeaked another one out.
David Bowie in Dune.
Yeah, there you go. Well, was he in Dune?
No, he was in Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. Yeah. But wasn't he in the original Dune?
No, Sting is in the original Dune.
Sting.
And
I'll take Sting in the original
he's
Dune.
He's awful.
And Mick Jagger is in a really dumb, bad movie, too.
Called Ruthless People. Or did he just do
No. He's in a sci-fi movie where he eats a rat and he's like, that's good eating.
That's good stuff.
Good job, Ben Barton. You get the win.
Tom Petty was pretty good on King of the Hill, too, as the next door neighbor.
Still out there, we have Lady Gaga.
Oh, she was very good.
Beyonce, J-Lo, Cher, Jennifer Hudson, Will Smith, Queen Latifah, Justin
Timberlake. Will Smith. I can't believe I missed. I was hitting the rapper vein that I missed Will Smith.
Justin Timberlake.
I forgot he was a rapper.
Barbara Streisand?
Nope. He's bad. Okay. Yentl is so bad. She's like a 38-year-old woman playing a 12-year-old, and it's so bad. Negative a million points.
Oh, how
for
dare you?
Many,
also,
many
Prince of Tides. She powerfully moved me in Prince of Tides.
There you go.
She's pretty good in that. She's pretty good in Nuts too with Richard Dreyfuss. If you remember that movie?
I do.
She's pretty good in that.
Yeah, I don't know who kept giving her movies. She's also in that boxing movie with Ryan O'Neal.
The Main Event. I saw that in the theater with my parents. It's like a disco rom com. That's
Timmy,
awful.
How dare you ask who's giving her these things? America gave her these things. America loves Barbara Streisand. I don't know
and
if you've noticed.
She earned them. She earned these things.
That's right. That's right, Timmy.
All right, Jeff Simons. In 1993, Czechoslovakia breaks up. Czech Republic and Slovakia emerge. Since 1993, who you got? Who's had the better run?
Are you kidding?
That's pretty easy.
The Czech Republic, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, Slovakia hasn't really made any waves, have they?
Slovakia is actually weirdly nice, and I can't remember the name of the capital, but we went there when we lived in Slovenia.
Isn't it Ljubljana? Or is that
That's the capital of Slovenia. How dare you, good
sir? I know. I'm fucking with you.
Okay. In 1993, Monica Seles was stabbed during a tennis event.
How crazy was that, by the way?
So crazy. Just guy comes down out of the stands.
I still maintain that modern security would respond more successfully and quickly to that event.
You also had the World Trade Center bombing in 93 with a van filled with explosives, I believe.
I maybe remember this wrong. Do you remember how they caught the dudes?
No, I don't. The rental agreement?
They went back to the rental place and tried to get their deposit back. Even though they'd blown the van up.
I mean,
you gotta respect that.
Short-sighted terrorists right there. They need eyes on the prize, fellas. Come on. Speaking of terrorists, in Turkey, Islamists set fire to a hotel and 37 die. Do either of you know who was staying in that hotel that would have led these terrorists to light it on fire? 1993, who do they have it out for?
Michael Jackson?
No.
Yeah, I'm going to need some kind of hint.
There was a book that caused controversy.
Salman Rushdie.
It was... not Salman Rushdie, but it was the Satanic Verses. They heard that the translator of Salman Rushdie's Satanic Verses was in that hotel.
You've got to give Jeff the score for that one, for sure.
I will give him the score.
That's
I feel like
crazy.
It was unkind of you to say that Jeff got it wrong.
My point is, they're going to light a hotel on fire because the translator's in there?
They really didn't like that book a lot.
And 37 people died?
Can I be honest? Which have either of you read the Satanic Verses?
I've only read that that page that caused great conflict.
I read the whole thing, and I did not like it. I found it incredibly difficult. I was only 20 years old, or 21 years old, or whatever it was, but it was impenetrably difficult for a young Jeff. I really did not make heads or tails of it.
Okay, but you weren't out for blood.
No, I was actually very bored and sad that I wasn't smarter than I am.
That's
how that book made me feel dumb. That's one of a series of great books that where I'm like, I am not that bright.
This is a beautiful, beautiful segue you've set us up here for. The invitation to cynicism question.
How dumb is Jeff?
This is why I blew up at you at that rehearsal. Like all of these, it was all these microaggressions just came to a head.
It comes down to Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time makes it sets the record for the longest running book on the best seller list. A Brief History of Time. Raise your hand if you bought that book. Am I the only one?
No. Dude, my dad read that book. My dad loves that book.
Okay.
And if he were on as a guest right now, would be like, thank you for asking me. Like, I got so many talks about that book. I actually have a huge soft spot in my heart because I love my dad for that book, even though I've never read it.
Well, you might as well have. Podcast.
What's that, Jeff?
I say might as well have read it, considering what a blow-by-blow he got from his dad while his dad was reading it.
I mean, I bought the book. I've tried to read it several times. Let's just be clear. The word brief is relative.
That's a good joke. I like it. Is your invitation to cynicism like top five books people buy and do not read?
Oh, yeah. What else you got?
I have the autobiography of Mark Twain. That's 850-page hardback. Yeah, I got that.
I got a really good one.
I feel seen. Yeah.
Infinite Jest.
Oh, great one.
Really? Didn't read it.
Nobody reads that.
No way. Oh. That's great. That's a great one.
Wow. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. As long as we're having fun, four people die in the Jack in the Box E. coli.
Oh, I have such a good story. Oh, God. I'm so glad you brought this up. So,
in 1993. Jeff Simons, okay, we're to go in another direction.
No, what this isn't great. If me blowing up in the rehearsal studio is Jeff Simons's childhood story, this is Ben Barton to a T in 1993. Ben and I are living together in Marin County. We don't have very much money at all. We shop at midnight at Safeway. Everything is Safeway Select. We actually eat a couple of cans of human potted meat food product, like dog food for people. And that Jack in the Box thing happens.
Uh-oh.
And my reaction is, oh, those poor people. And Ben's reaction is, wait till you see the sale that Jack in the Box is going to have to put on to keep from going out of business. And sure enough, like a week later, they're like, 4-for-1 tacos. I'm like, well, that's it. And he's like, oh, no. The bottom hasn't even begun to drop out.
It's like, wait for it.
And they really did. Like 2 months later, it was pretty much, if you come into the restaurant and give us any currency from a penny to a dollar, you can leave with all the food you want. You can even come around back and make it yourself. We don't care. And we went and ate what can only be described as an elephantine amount of Jack in the Box in one night
took bags home with us too.
Yes, it was unbelievable. But that for me, I still until that Jack in the Box went out of business, every time I drove by it, I just remember Ben came home from work and he'd been driving around. He drove past it. He came from work, got me. He's like, it's time. Get in the car. The Jack in the Box has hit rock bottom. Let's go. Bring your pocket change. We're gonna eat 7,000 calories. Oh, thank you, Tim.
All right.
Oh, so good.
Good stuff. All right, Ben. This question is for you. In 1993, Belgium becomes a federal monarchy rather than a unitary kingdom. Given the trouble devolved governments have administrating principalities, wouldn't a constituent monarchy have made more sense in the face of the semi-autonomous republics that comprise Western Europe?
I object to this question because Belgium are just waiting to get invaded. It doesn't really matter. They're just hanging around waiting for either Germany or France to just take them over.
Well, we've just lost our listeners in Belgium.
That was Monty Python-esque. That was great.
It was a tough. I felt that the Jack in the Box offered a great transition into that question. But we've got to go. Miss Plain is back. The robot lady has been away in Washington, D.C. She's back. I'm going to take her out to dinner after this podcast. So let's go. Our three albums. Who goes first?
Our three albums.
I'll go first.
Let's
In
go.
1993, the first half, as Jeff mentioned, we lived together in California. And then I headed out to Michigan Law School. And I was a mixed student at Haverford, which Jeff will be happy to report. Basically, my freshman and sophomore year, I got mostly C's and I spent most of my time drinking. Junior year, I became a more serious student. And I really, really, really tried hard my junior and senior year. And then the 2 years in between college and law school, like when I did that with Jeff, I had two jobs. I worked at a housing discrimination place. So I was doing this like legal work, looking out for discrimination. And then I drove a school bus. And I just became kind of like a hardworking, hard-assed person, almost in reaction to the person that I was freshman and sophomore year. And then of course, first year of law school just really draws that out of a person. Like it's just a super intense time. So I was extra passionate about not borrowing too much money. So I saved up a bunch of money. This is why we had to eat a Jack in the Box after the E. coli scare, is because even though I was driving a school bus, I managed to save several thousand bucks to pay for tuition. I lived in a basement off campus. Like I had one little tiny window that was above ground that was like the shape of a 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. And that was it for my little room. And that was my apartment. And it was so cold that fall. It was the coldest winter in 20 years in Ann Arbor. There was an entire week where it didn't crack zero. So I had the wind cutting, I had like a scarf around my face and the wind would cut through and freeze my eyes shut walking to and from class. It was a hard time, but an amazing time. And like one of those times that's very salient in your mind, you know what I mean? Like you're trying super, super extra mega hard. And so I was just like a really gritted teeth, intense person, even worse than I am now during that period. And a record came out that year that spoke to me, period. It remains one of my all-time favorite records, one of my favorite works of art, and one of my favorite bands. We talked about it before, Pearl Jam versus. And I tell you the personal story because the personal story captures the record for me. My first year of law school for the exam period, I studied super hard. And then the mornings of the exam, I would get up. I hadn't showered since the last exam, right? So I'm like all dirty. I would shower. I would shave. I wouldn't put on a suit, but I would get dressed up. Like I put on a sweater. Like I just look nice to come to the exam. And then I would go into my room, my basement room, and I would turn my stereo to 8 and wake everybody in that entire stupid group house up. And I would play Leash by Pearl Jam and just headbang to get fired up and then go in and murder those exams. This record like captures that like mid-20s angry youth, you know what I mean? It also has beautiful songs. It has the elderly woman behind a counter. It has Daughter. It has songs that are not about that energy. Like the mix of it also spoke to me, but in particular that like passion and drive and like with an edge to it was what really, really, really got me in this record. In the fullness of time, my favorite songs on the record, I actually consider it to be one song, is Go and Animal. And Jeff and I both had the great good fortune to see them on this tour. I saw them multiple times on this tour, and they played those two songs back to back frequently as a medley. Like they would finish up Go and then just swallow right into Animal. I love those songs. Jeff and I have discussed what our favorite bootleg is from 93 to 94 and agreed on the Atlanta 94 show at the Fox Theater. We're going to pick it up 1 minute into Animal so we can get the second verse into the chorus, into the solo, into the five, five, five against one.
Let's go.
Okay, so hold on. I have to switch websites to do this. There's going to be a mild pause here, which you should remove, but...
Hey, you don't even listen, so you don't know.
I don't know.
All sorts of things. I've got like space sounds.
Does also, he have Jeff, does he have space sounds?
Don't sweat the production department. Timmy is both Ringo and Bling Johns.
Verses by Pearl Jam.
I'd rather be with an animal.
I mean, I think it's fair to say that it is a mishmash of old stuff. Like, I'm not trying to claim it's a completely new sound, but especially this tour, first that twin guitar attack. I mean, good night. Amazing. How those guys play together. So beautiful. And in particular, it's ironic, but I mean, I like Stone better. I mean, the rhythm guitar on these tracks is just so far off the hook. I mean, in this exact song, you've got early Led Zeppelin, you've got mid-career Who, and then it'll bink, 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 like the little, you got like a little funky guitar slipped in there as well.
So
and the solo parts, all of the lead parts are so tasty. And what can you say about Eddie? I mean, just a force of nature
really
at this
is.
Time. Just pounding it out. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, he stands toe-to-toe with Plant and Jagger and anybody else from that period as a rock and roll singer, like just all timer. And also I love the vulnerability of it. You know what I mean? Like how hurt he is. He's so sad. He's so bummed out that somebody was so mean to him. And just belting it out this way. Just amazing.
Does he get the credit he deserves?
I would put this band and him as properly rated.
Yeah, I think so. You know, they have the most devoted fan base. They haven't had a hit in what, 20 years?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking in terms, like you were thinking of Led Zeppelin, Robert Plant, Mick Jagger. I think guys 10 years older than us prize those singers. I think, you know, the students I teach, they know Kurt Cobain. They don't know Eddie Vedder at all. I don't think they get Pearl Jam.
It is true. My daughters are not big fans of Pearl Jam.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, that may be right, Timmy.
But yeah, on a track like that, it's like, holy crap. The dude's just on fire.
And just an amazing performer. It's fearless. And yeah, this is an amazing record. There have been moments in my life where this is my favorite record in the world. No question. I just love this record so much. It's just fantastic. And the vinyl came out a week before the CD. And I was lucky enough to track down a copy of it. And I knew all the songs by the time I saw the Versus tour 2 days before the CD of the songs from Versus came out, but I knew all the songs because I'd listened to the vinyl record like 50 times by the time I saw it. And they were just, they were untouchable in the fall of 1993. It's better than, that was easily the best show I'd ever seen in my life up to that point. And there, it's not even close.
It's an amazing, great, and we'll think about this. It's a great second album.
It is.
Talk about taking the leap. I mean, yep. The first record is great. I mean, the production's weak and there's some stinkers on it, but the first record's got some terrific songs on it.
Yep.
To the point where you're like, I don't know how they're possibly going to top it. And then they just buried it. Second record is so great.
And Jeff, you talked about this before, but the album cover, even like the album cover is like, dude, take it off.
Yeah, no, man. That's exactly just everything about them is there on the cover.
In your face. Yeah.
And recorded it here in San Rafael, California, man.
Yeah,
recorded
like,
they were recording that 3 miles away from where Ben and I were living. I mean, you know, maybe that's why we like it so much. It was just in the air.
Right. Huh. All right, Jeff Simons, Robot Lady awaits. What do you got?
So do you remember last week I was like, I'm making a last minute change. I'm so excited about my 1993 record. But the record I was so excited about came out in 1994. So I completely screwed myself. So I'm cheating a little bit. I'm going to use a guy who we talked about with his original band and is now a solo artist. So,
okay.
And I'll keep it brief for the Robot Lady. But my pick is Paul Weller from The Jam. He makes his best.
Oh, nice.
His best record of his solo career is from this year. It's called Wildwood, and it's the leap record for him, right? Like the first solo. So Paul Weller goes from The Jam into this kind of dance thing called the Style Council, which is hit and miss through the 80s. And then he puts out a solo record in 1992 that's just called Paul Weller. And it's kind of like the last pieces of the Style Council and a little bit of this new thing. Wildwood is when Paul Weller figures out who he's going to be for the next 15 years. It's a complete reimagining of his talents. What he realizes is that if he goes back behind The Jam and he doesn't reach back for the power pop stuff like Beatles hit singles and Who and Small Faces and all the things that turned The Jam into like the great punk rock song band, he goes for the like more stretched out stuff like Traffic, Fairport Convention, stuff with acoustic guitars, stuff with a groove, and he reimagines himself on the record Wildwood. Wildwood is just one great song after another. It holds together beautifully as a record. It's got this really earthy, woody percussion. Like it sounds like a record recorded in the mid 1970s, and I mean that as a compliment. Like it's very analog and warm, and it sounds like it's like recorded with tube amps and really loosely tuned drums. And this is the record where Paul Weller learns how to sing like a grown-up. He was a shouter on the Jam's records, and he's kind of a faux R&B singer and Style Council, but here he sounds like a grown-up like singer who's inside his own songs and cares what he's writing about. I had seen Paul Weller on the first solo tour when he was touring the first record, because a guy I worked with was like a Paul Weller, like a Jam fanatic, and dragged me to it. And I was like, this is pretty good. So when Wildwood came out, I was anticipating it, but I thought this was just, it's like what Ben was saying about Versus. This is a leap and a half. I like so many records on this record. I'm not even really sure which one to play. They all are very like groovy without being funky, folky without being twee, rock and roll without being, too much bass guitar drums. Like, I just think this record sits in a sweet spot of songcraft and sonic warmth. And I listen to it still over and over and over again. I think I'll just play the first song.
Yeah, I was going to say, is the first song Sunflower?
Yeah, I'm just going to go with Sunflower.
Oh, yeah.
Just a great riff and a great sound. You'll get a great sense of whether this is for you from that. So Elder Statesman, the guy who becomes the godfather of Britpop in the 90s, and a guy still making a record a year. Paul Weller's made like 20 solo records. This is unbelievable. He's like the hardest working guy in show business,
That's
even
awesome.
Though I think most people stopped listening to him a long time ago. But
Wildwood by Paul Weller.
We have no past. I write this down while I'm in control. I choose the words and how the melody goes. Long winding streets, we walk hand in hand. Now I long for the sharp wind to take my breath away again. I run my fingers through your hair. They're like a wee field I run through.
You can hear like how careful the playing is, like the great ride cymbal work on the drums, and he switches from the hi-hat to the floor tom, like, and then Weller's guitar playing is such a great mix of rhythm and lead without it being flashy, and it's all so close mic'd. Like, it's really, you have to be really good to play like that and capture it on in a recording. And this is, you know, before Pro Tools, before editing. Like, it's just a great. And then he took this band on the road and then recorded the next three records with them. Like, they really become his little posse. And I think this is a great example of a guy writing for the musicians he has in the room as well. So it's a solo record, but it's really collaborative too. So
nice.
Good stuff.
Ben, what were your thoughts at the time or now?
I like this one. And that song in particular is great.
Yeah. Really good song. So I think I mentioned this in season one, how I interviewed him. Did I tell you guys that?
Well, tell us more.
Well, I love that song. I had that album. It was sent to me at the Northeastern News. They were trying to get it on college radio, and I went and they, you know, they sent me tickets and an interview opportunity. So I went to the concert. Jill Solbuhl.
Oh, don't get Jeff started.
Which is so bizarre that was his opening act.
I love me some Jill Solbuhl.
And backstage, I interviewed, you know, I had my reporter's notebook, you know, those thin, long notebooks. I had my pencil, and I went back and I started asking him questions. I had never heard of the Jam. I didn't know he was in the Style Council. I had heard of the Style Council. I mean, I know, not like I've got classes. I've got, you ever take Intro to Microeconomics? I was dying. And anyways, I tried to interview him. His answers came through in such a thick accent. I had nothing to write down. I just nodded my head. Have you ever heard him speak?
Yeah, he's got a really thick brogue. In fact, in the new documentary about the Jam called All the Young Ideas, there are times when they give him subtitles.
Yeah, that's what I needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just a kid taking notes. I'm like nodding my head. No clue what he said. I gotta go find that article, see if I gave him a good review.
What did you say? Like, Paul Weller is a fine young man who writes songs and sings them on a stage. I've seen Paul Weller play so many times. I guess, you know how some artists just come through your town and come on a night where you're like, oh, you're not doing anything and it's not sold out. Like, I've seen Paul Weller at the last minute maybe four times where I'm like, oh, he's playing. Like, the last time I saw him, I walked to the play. It was playing at a place in Berkeley that I could walk to. Uh-huh. I literally walked over there, bought a ticket at the door, walked right up to the front, saw the whole show, and walked home. I was like, it's so weird. Like, he's just around anytime I have a free night.
Oh, that's great. I love it. All right. Well, you guys done well here in 1993. Unfortunately, you came up short. Listen, who's the guy on Twitter, Brooklyn Dad? Whose friend is that?
I mean, it could be one any of our friends.
He's taken to predicting our...
Oh, no, dude, that guy is a friend of a friend of ours.
Yeah.
But
we have actual people we don't know who listen now, Timmy. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wait, we don't know him?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a good guy. Oh, I thought it was one of your friends. So I love the fact that as he's waiting for 1992's podcast to come out, he's predicting. He knows us, and he's predicting what we'll pick.
He got him wrong, though.
And he's going to be so mad at me. I think he was giving me so much more credit than I deserved.
Neil Carlson, right? That's the name
of the guy? Neil, that's him.
And then this other guy jumps on and says, Neil, you messed up or something. Tim's going to choose the Lemonheads because they're local. And I do not appreciate being pigeonholed, sir. I have varied musical tastes that go beyond the Boston area code.
How's the oxygen on that high horse of yours, Tim?
Unfortunately, in 1993,
it's the Mighty Mighty Boston's. Here we go.
Hold on. Nick Carlson's friend is Rick Kahn. He's friends with Rick Kahn. That's the friend of a friend.
Okay.
He's great. Yeah, it's really funny that I've been pigeonholed as such. So in 1993, I was listening to a lot of music at the Linwood Grill in Boston with my buddy Danny as the bartender. So you might think, Twitter follower, that I'm going to pick Power Man 5000. But no, I am not.
Jesus Christ.
I am going to go into...
I have a pencil ready to stab my ears out, Timmy. I'm ready.
I am going to go international. Because I'm more of a world music type of fellow.
I believe
there's a band called the Cranberries who put an album out in 1993. Let's go. Hey, Jeff Simons, everybody else is doing it. Why can't we?
What song do you want?
Linger.
Oh, my God. Linger. You are the best. Here we go. We're lingering.
Everybody else is doing it. Why can't we? By the Cranberries.
How could you pick this one over Dreams? How is that even possible that that's happening?
I like this one better. You know?
No, I like Dreams better. But I don't like either of them a whole lot. This gets going right away. It's what I like about the song. Ah, there we go.
Kind of lingers.
Ah, now I get it.
Dolores, with that little hint of a brogue.
How does Dreams go?
Oh, all my day is changing every day in every possible way. You know that one?
What's the really big Cranberry song?
Zombie.
Now that's the next album.
Okay, right. I kept waiting for Linger to do that. I was like, is it going to do that thing?
Dolores can sing. This is the song where they used in She's All That when the girl with glasses becomes the hot prom date for Pretty Prince Jr. Is that correct? This is what's playing in the background, I believe.
Is it?
I think so.
I remember they make fun of it in Clueless because the one dude has this album. He's like, He plays it all the time for Alicia Silverstone.
I think it's so funny that you're like, it has a slight accent. As I was listening to that, I was like, she couldn't clean up that accent a wee smidgen.
How dare you? Why should the Irish clean up their accent? Maybe you should clean up your Maryland accent, sir.
Maybe I did. No, I just think linger is such a funny, like, it's such a syllable that jumps out as being said in a funny way. Linger. It makes me think of lingonberries every time the song. I think of it like Welch's lingonberry sauce should have used this song. But
wow. All right. It makes me think of the scan function. Because I'm like, oh, this song's on the radio. Why is it not moving on to the next station? I'm banging on scam.
All right. Well, next.
Did you actually own this record, or did you just like Dreams and Linger? Okay.
Oh, I own this record. I played it at a Stars restaurant where I worked as I cleaned up. Yeah, this was a go-to Boston.
I thought you played Hallelujah, I Love Her So by Ray Charles while you cleaned up at Stars restaurant.
I also played a lot of Van Morrison on the Bright Side of the Road when I did a lot of cleaning up, Jeff Simons.
I liked it that you had like Dick Van Dyke spring in your step when you were cleaning up. You couldn't even get like, you couldn't even take that dead end job and make it unhappy at the end. You were like, right, the bright side of the
dead end job. How dare you? Stars in Hingham Harbor is an institution.
Is it still open? Still?
Yes, it is.
Do you get half price off shots when you go because you used to work there?
Well, what's really bizarre, when I walk in and nobody knows me, I'm like, I ran this place, child.
You know, Timmy, you'll agree with me, right?
What's that, Ben?
Timmy, you'll agree with me. I worked every job in a restaurant that wasn't head chef and host. I mean, I was a waiter, I was a busboy, I was a dishwasher, I was a line cook,
host.
I was a prep cook, I was a host. Grill cook. I was the expediter. I did every single one of those jobs. And I got fired from jobs at restaurants. I worked at 5 different restaurants. It's an amazing training for life. You learn so much about life by working those jobs.
So great. So great. So
my daughters are like, how come you tip so much? And I'm like, dude, you work these jobs, you'll know. my daughters are like, we'll go to a place where like they bring out the wrong food and I ask for it and they bring it out as wrong again. I ask for it, they bring it out as wrong again. They're like, what'd you tip? And I'm like, 20%. That's the basement. That's it. You're going to have to murder me to get me below 20%. Like stab my arm with a fork.
All right. So you guys will love this. We'll close this out. Working at Stars. Waitress named Melissa who's got a stigmatism, and she usually wears contacts that fix her stigmatism, but on one day she had to wear her glasses, thick glasses, like ridiculous, and she's walking in and she says something that pisses off the cook, Helmet, and she's walking back out on the floor with her food. Helmet's like, hey, Coca-Cola called, they want the bottom of their bottles back. Killed me.
Wait, Timmy, can I tell one story?
Yeah, hit it.
All right. So I'll ask, this is a quiz. Of those various jobs, what was I worst at?
I think you could get into line cook.
No, dishwashing.
My worst job was waiter. I was terrible at waiter.
Oh, really?
Okay. I was charming and lovely, but very disorganized.
Oh.
My parents came in to one of my jobs as a waiter and they sat down, and my entire life, my dad has ordered water, no ice. That's been his order from as long as I can remember. They sit down, he orders water, no ice. I go in, I come back out. I bring everybody water with ice, including my dad. I hand it to him in front of me and he goes, Ben, there's ice in this water. You're terrible at this job. Just right on the money. I was like, damn, I am terrible at this job.
No, start chopping on your ice, old man. Good stuff. All right, gentlemen, 1993 is put to bed. I'll split up the Beatles, so we'll do a special
podcast. So you got to cut out the tech in the middle.
Yeah, I screwed up the animal. Don't forget to cut out the Pearl Jam mistakes, because that was
I will do that. You know me. I'm on it.
If you want help, just send it to me. I'd be happy.
I got a whole bunch of stuff, because I also have the mountain biking stuff to send you. So as soon as I get all the students packed and
You love how Ben and I have not asked, hey, what happened to that mountain biking stuff? I definitely do not want to listen to that. Your sad students did.
I mean, get upset, students. How dare you?
I mean, like, when's the last time I made you like weigh in on one of my students' projects? You're such an inclusive guy. You're so nice. You're like, you know what? Other adults will be fascinated by these maudlin tales that my students have told.
Well, I know you guys have been clamoring for stuff ever since our Dylan podcast with my students during the winter.
Yeah, they really lit it up. Those kids were like, they were at the height of fandom. That was like talking to guys who had like machine guns just off camera, like smile at the camera and be polite, or your family never leaves Siberia.
Whenever I check our podcast totals and see how many listens we have, and I like think of the 800 listens that particular podcast has, I'm like, oh, sorry, y'all. All right.
Timmy, another triumph, my friends.
Yeah, thank you, friends. Hey, Ben, good triumph, brother.
Hey, if you're having as much fun as we are, leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a rating on Spotify, iHeartRadio. Wherever you listen to podcasts, give us a shout. And then check us out on Twitter or at our Facebook page, 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Hey guys, it's Miriam Love here, and I want to share something very special with you. Check out my new release, All In, the Spanish Remixes, out now on Electric House Records. And always remember, be love, share love, all love.
Available now wherever you listen to music.
Are you a fan of classic cinema or a young person who wants to discover the best films of all time? Do these legendary movies still hold up?
On the Generation Film Podcast, two guys who grew up when movies dominated the culture share a great film with a panel of young movie lovers and see how it plays for today's generation.
We discuss changes in storytelling, styles, representation,
the making of each film, its initial reception, and how its meaning has changed over the years.
Join us as we explore cinema classics across generations on Generation Film.
Electric Acid.